to the Renaissance, episode 145, Leonardo part 1,796,432. Captain's log.
And his
Stargate.
Right.
We approached the Fumato constellation.
Oh, right.
As promised at the end of the last episode, this time we're talking about Leonardo's pioneering of the technique known as sfumato. Sfumato comes from the Italian word for smoke, fumo, and it sort of involves using hazy, smoky outlines rather than hard lines as boundaries between objects in a painting. And yes, Leonardo is considered the pioneer of sfumato. He, in fact, we think invented the term. First use of the term, we know it is, comes from Leonardo. In Italian, the word these days is used as an adjective. Like you would say, somebody with pale blonde hair is biondo sfumato. Or you could use it as a verb. L'affare è sfumato means the deal has gone up in smoke. The affair has gone up in smoke.
I like that.
But Da Vinci was talking about painting. So we've talked about it, I think, a couple of times in the past, but this part of his career, the Milan period, is where he really goes hardcore in trying to figure this out. And then, you know, most famously, it's used in the Mona Lisa.
Right.
But it sort of talks about techniques to create a soft transition from one object to the other in a painting rather than a hard line, and how you do that successfully.
Right.
Because that's not the way they did it in Italy back then. You know, the way that painting was taught was to draw the outlines of the characters.
Right.
And then you paint within the lines, and then you do some
coloring book.
Yeah, then you do some shading in between the lines to give depth perception. But if you look at any one of Leonardo's contemporary paintings, like a Botticelli, for example, you know, you see the lines. Like, he's painting in between the lines.
Right.
Leonardo worked out, yeah, that's a bunch of fucking bullshit. That's literally what he wrote in his notebooks. Yeah, that's a bunch of fucking... He said in Italian, of course, backwards, but that's a bunch of fucking bullshit. That's because that's not how things look in real life.
Exactly.
And he did, being Leonardo, he did a shit ton of science and research to try and figure out why our eyes see what they see and don't see lines around objects. And so that's goes into part of this. Now,
I
know what you're thinking is, most of the time you see blurry edges around things anyway, but that's a result of gummies and brain trauma, oxygen deprivation when you're a bubble boy. But for Leonardo, he's talking about something different. Most of us don't see the world as blurrily as you do, right?
Oh, well, it's also the plastic from being in I'm still in the bubble, so it's that's thrown up too. Now, I know you're about to crack on some logic, some mathematics, and some other stuff that Leonardo had to go through in order to prove his point. But the one thing that really got me was the very common, not common, the very basic idea of, look, if I'm trying to create something that looks like a 3D image on a 2D surface, I can't have lines because, like you said, that's not reality. If I look at your arm, if I look at your head, there's no hard line on your silhouette, whatever. You know, it just kind of fades. It just kind of goes around to the other side. And so at the very least, I have to get rid of these boundary lines, these thick boundary lines, because that's not how reality is. And it's certainly not going to fool anybody when I start putting it on paper or canvas or anything else.
Now, of course, as you well know, because we did the Three Illusions podcast together.
Right.
From a scientific perspective, Leonardo is absolutely right. There is no separation between objects. If you, the way I always explained it, and I put it in my book, if you could put on some goggles, and like sci-fi goggles, and you had a little dial on the side, and you could like zoom in, like in a American network procedural, you know, zoom in on that.
Yes.
They don't say zoom in. What do they say? Increase. No. What do they say in these procedures?
Huh.
They go, shit. They always say.
Not zoom in.
No, they always have some stupid TV terminology. Anyway, you know what I'm thinking. You know what I'm
going
talking
closer.
About.
Yeah. I can't
pull in on
as
that.
As soon as we're done.
Pull in on that.
Yeah.
And pull. Increase the resolution. You know.
There we go.
Yeah.
Intensify. Can you, or yeah, whatever.
Can you clean that up a bit? Sure. I can take a pixelated image and just.
Sure.
Reverse pixelated.
This is Star Trek, motherfucker. Yeah, I can take a picture from 1972 of a license plate where half of it's missing and bring up the full thing. Do it all the time, cuz. Anyway, I'm done now. I apologize.
Just ask
for that.
Hal to do it. I'm sorry, Ray. I cannot do that. So if you could zoom in to an atomic level, you would see that there is no separation between the atoms that are quote-unquote your body and the atoms that are quote-unquote the air around you or the chair you're sitting on, the coffee mug you're holding, because atoms, we know, don't have hard boundaries. They have fuzzy electron cloud boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would not see a hard line of separation. You would see a smooshing and a smudging between the...
Smooshing.
The oxygen and hydrogen atoms in the air and the oxygen and hydrogen and carbon atoms in your that make up your cells of your body, you know, they would be, you know, they would have fuzzy boundaries. So Leonardo
he was more right than he realized.
Yeah.
He was just making a point about perception and optics and reality and what I observed, but you just took it to a whole nother fucking level. But again, proving that he's right, even though he probably didn't grasp that as much as we can today.
Yeah. So back to the technique. He described it as blending colors without the use of lines or borders, quote, in the manner of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it came largely out of his observation and writing about shadows. Who the fuck pays attention to shadows? Leonardo da Vinci. That's motherfucking who.
He pays attention to everything.
And all painters, I'm sure. But he really paid attention. Davvero, in Italian.
Right.
Really.
But you just made the point. So, I'm sorry, but you just made this point. I just thought of this, but I'm sure you've already thought it through. But so Leonardo's like, okay, I can't use lines because that's one, it's not realistic, and two, it'd make my whatever I do look two-dimensional. I can't have that. But I have to have something because, you know, the body stops or a tree stops. I have to have something to take the place of a hard line. And that is the shadows, the coloring, perspective. I mean, just fucking brilliant. To figure out a problem is one thing. To figure out a beautiful, elegant solution to that problem, that's Leonardo.
Leonardo ho pagato l'attenzione davvero. Sempre.
I'm gonna take your word for it.
I wouldn't. I'm pulling that out of my ass. It's probably all wrong.
That's my favorite place.
He paid so much attention to shadows, he wrote 15,000 words in his notebooks on shadows. More than any other artistic topic. He wrote about in his notebooks is on shadows. He categorized the fuck out of shadows. Well, there are 35 different kinds of shadows. Let me explain them all to you. What
let me get my PowerPoint
them
presentation.
And how you paint them, right? Seriously, he was that crazy.
God. Yeah.
He wrote that the primary goal of a painter is to make a flat surface display a body as if modeled and separated from this plane. The crowning achievement of painting arises from light and shade. He said, you know, in his upcoming best-selling, New York Times best-selling book on the subject of painting, he was going, the longest section would be on shadows. Shadows appear to me to be of supreme importance and perspective because without them, opaque and solid bodies will be ill-defined. Shadow is the means by which bodies display their form. The forms of bodies could not be understood in detail but for shadow. Now, nobody I know lives more in the shadows than you, Ray. Explain why hiding in the shadows is important for you in your personal life.
Right. Well, mostly because everybody's after me. But if you do shadow, you can convey depth. You can convey distance. You can something's further away or close up, or if you want to focus someone's attention on something. But you can do a lot with shadow, basically to show distance instead of using straight lines. That's all I got out of that, if I answer your question.
Bring it in. Bring it in. Bring the camera in. Bring it in. Can you bring do it here?
Right. God. Award-winning porn director Cameron Riley. Oh, he's wiping the jism off. Okay.
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York. And all the clouds which lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarums changed to merry meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front, and now, instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to the lascivious pleasings of a lute. But I, that am not shaped for sport of tricks, nor made to court an amorous looking-glass, I, that am rudely stamped and want love's majesty to strut before a wanton ambling nymph, I, that am curtailed of this fair proportion, cheated of feature by dissembling nature, deformed, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world, scarce half made up, and that so lamely and unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them. Why, I, in this weak piping time of peace, have no delight to pass away the time, unless to see my shadow in the sun and descant on mine own deformity. See? Ooh, shadow, sun, like deformity.
That. Yes.
That's what I was thinking of you. When I think there's a thing always makes me of you, the deformity, unfinished, sent before my time into this breathing world. All about you, man. This is made for you, this speech. Yes. You
should. Not too much.
And therefore, since I cannot prove a lover, yes, right, to entertain these fair well-spoken days, I am determined to prove a villain. And hate the idle pleasures of these days. Plots have I laid, inductions dangerous by drunk prophecies, libels and dreams, to set my brother Clarence and the king in deadly hate, the one against the other. And if King Edward be as true and just as I am subtle, false and treacherous, this day should Clarence closely be mewed up about a prophecy which says the G of Edward's heirs, the murderer, shall be. Dive thoughts down to my soul. Here Clarence comes. And sing.
Sing. Nice. What I got from that was why I became a backdoor lover. It probably meant something else, but that's what I got out of it.
That was a famous Phil not Collins good at the front. Song. Was it in the 90s? I'm a backdoor lover.
Yeah.
I keep a hold on you, believe it. I'm a backdoor lover. And baby, get down on your knees.
Lover. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's how Norman Howe started a conversation.
fuck it, where were we? Shadows.
Shadows.
Now, as I said before, most artists at the time emphasized the importance of contour lines. You had to draw the lines, but Leonardo studied Aristotle's work on shadows and then did his own experiments using different lamps and different objects to block the lamps. And he came down with these different categories of shadows, and he was intending on writing a chapter on each category of shadow.
Too much.
And we're now, you know, for the next 12 episodes of our podcast, each episode is going to be dedicated to one category. Hey, if it's good enough for Leonardo, good enough for us to do, don't complain.
No, Just be thankful.
How dare you?
That we're doing this.
Complain. Yes.
Who do you think you are?
Leonardo says this is important. It's important, yes. Motherfuckers.
Well, not only that, but if he starts talking and everybody else shuts up, including the Duke, who in the fuck do you listeners think you are? That, Cam, is how you win people over.
He said there are primary shadows caused by direct light hitting an object. There are derived shadows that come from ambient light diffused through the atmosphere. There are shadows that are tinged with light reflected off other objects.
Good God.
There are compound shadows where you have multiple sources of light, each casting a shadow, then they overlap. Mm-hmm. You have shadows made by the subdued light at dawn or sunset. Shadows made by light that has been filtered through linen or paper. Etc., etc., etc. He really thought about this deeply and broke it all down and described how to paint each version of a shadow. You don't just paint them all the same way. It's a different approach. Nature does it differently. You got to do it differently.
Exactly. Copy Mother Nature. She knows.
He wrote, "Do not edge contours with a definite outline because the contours are lines and they are invisible, not only from a distance but also close at hand. If the line and also the mathematical point are invisible, the outlines of things, also being lines, are invisible even when they are near at hand." Now, you know this from, I don't know, high school mathematics probably. There's no such thing as a line or a point in nature. They're mathematical constructs. They're concepts like free will and identity, time. They're all illusions. They're constructs that we create.
The female orgasm.
The clitoris. To help us explain the world that we see around us, you know. These are ideas, but we can't. It's a mistake to think that they have any reality. They're useful tools for explaining things, but they don't have any reality. If you're trying to paint reality, you can't paint any of these things into your painting.
And I like when he wrote, "The line has in itself neither matter nor substance, and may rather be called an imaginary idea than a real object. And this being its nature, it occupies no space." So basically, quit drawing lines on people and objects because it's not fucking there. But he was saying it better than that.
"The line forming the boundary of a surface is of invisible thickness like Ray's penis. Therefore, O painter, do not surround your bodies with lines."
Right. Or Ray's penis.
Unless.
Right.
Unless, he said, they are what lines?
Blurred lines. All I know is that you were talking about my penis, and in the same sentence was the word thickness. I'm good. I'm done. Y'all, I'll see y'all next week.
He then went on to write, "Vision dreams of passion, and all the while I think of you."
Oh, I think we switched subjects.
He's talking about the white lines, but he said it had to be done like this. "Vision dreams of passion, and all the while I think of you. Ticket to ride the white line highway. Tell all your friends they can go my way. Pay your toll, sell your soul. Pound for pound it costs more than gold. Longer you stay, the more you pay. My white lines go a long way, either up your nose or to your vein. Nothing to gain except killing your brain. Freeze! Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-rock! Say freeze, come on! Freeze! Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-rock! Say freeze, come on! What lines go through my mind, and all the while I think of you.
You can't do what Cam just did in a painting or a sculptor or a book. Fuck that shit. Podcasting is where to go. Big P. Not talking about my penis. Talking about podcasting. Anyway, I'm done.
Leo's ideas for sfumata also came from his intense study of optics. Now, he, like most people at the time, thought that the way vision worked sure. was that God just made it happen. Secondly, they thought that all the rays of light
right.
converged at a single point inside the eye, came in through the pupil, hit the retina in a single point, and so your brain just went, look, there's a thing. But after a while, he realized, thinking about this deeply, that a point is like a line. It's a mathematical construct. Exactly. It doesn't exist in nature. There's no such thing as a defined point that can't be broken down into smaller and smaller things. So, and then he also started dissecting eyes. And we'll talk about that in a second. Of course. I mean, you know, I know that's what you love to spend your weekends doing. And he realized in doing that and studying the retina that the visual perception occurs across the entire area of the retina. Otherwise, why is it there? What's the point of it if it's not capturing something and doing something, right?
Yeah. Or why have a big eye, but only all the light and the things you see only come through one tiny part of the overall eye? That doesn't make sense. And I'm sure Leo probably went, you know what? The logic, that fails the logic test. So it's time for experiments.
But that is exactly what happens. It all goes through the...
What? No, you tell me, you know, the one head. Little tiny point versus... I thought it went through the larger surface of the eye. Does it literally just go through one tiny point in the eye?
One tiny point, yeah. That's the whole point of the pupil. It's like a camera that goes bigger and smaller.
What about the needle experiment that
others have done? Yeah, well, the needle experiment that he got from the 11th century Arab mathematician Al-Azen, Al-Khazam, Al-Khazu. If you say his name correctly, you will turn into a... Turn into a donkey in a magic carpet.
Or you get three wishes, I think. maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, that's Will Smith as the genie gives you the three wishes. Right. And, you know, just don't one of those is, keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth!
Motherfucker! Yeah.
You think he was having a bad day, Will Smith?
He is now. I don't know about then.
But- or he looked at... He laughed at the joke and then looked at his wife and realized if he didn't do something quick, he was going to have a lot of bad days.
Maybe a little shove or you get in his face and you do the nose-to-nose breathing. You know, you're...
Well, just walk up and go, dude, that's not cool. Don't make fun of my wife's illness. Cool. Like, please, you know.
Yeah, please.
Everybody, I just like to say, it's not funny to make fun of somebody with an illness. That's pretty lame, dude. Like, you know, thank you very much. Have a good night.
Yeah.
I'll take my seat. Sorry for the interruption.
I'll take my
I just wanted to express my displeasure in a gentlemanly way, and I'll now go take my seat.
But no, he
That's
chose...
what we would have done, because we're...
Yeah, gentlemen.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, and plus I'm afraid of everybody. But
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only people we slap are bitches. You know, we don't slap dudes. You slap a bitch. Or your kids.
Not if she's a hard working
bitch. Or animals.
Right. Don't know. Because cruelty to animals.
Well, not your top bitch. She's the one bringing in the money.
The money earner.
It's the lower bitches that just aren't working hard because they know that you're getting a big payday from your number one bitch. It's the lower ones. Then you're breaking them in.
Right.
So you will go into that room and suck that dick.
And I don't probably have to mention this. I mean, I'm embarrassed to even say this. But, of course, when you do have to rough them up, always... pummel the body, never the face, because that's where the money's at. So always gut, ribs, back, leg. Anyway, you probably, it's like pimping 101. You probably know that already.
You got to protect the moneymaker.
Right.
where were we? Oh, the needle experiment. Right. So you get a needle.
Right. I don't like
this. And you hold it up in front of your eye and you bring it closer and closer into your eye.
I don't trust anybody that
then
much.
You stick it into your eyeball, inject the heroin straight in. When you've done with that, you pull it back out.
And then you see if you can see or not. If you have vision. I can't see!
That's how...
Then it works. or it doesn't work. I don't know.
Everything's blurry. Well, no wonder you stuck a fucking needle full of heroin in your eyeball, you idiot.
Right. Don't do that again.
No, you hold it vertically and you bring it closer and closer to the pupil of your eye. And what you discover is the closer it gets, the blurrier it becomes.
Right.
And when it's right up against your eyeball, I did this. Did you do this? Did you follow through with Leonardo's experiment?
No.
I did. What happens? You get it right up in front of the pupil and you can see around it.
Right.
It becomes blurry and your eye can see every. It doesn't block your vision like you might think you can it still, would if it's blocking
exactly.
The pupil. You can still see around it.
Yes.
So he wrote, if you place a sewing needle in front of the pupil as near to the eye as possible, you will see that the perception of any object placed behind this needle at however great a distance will not be impeded.
Okay.
You can still see things behind the needle.
Right.
Now, this is because the needle is narrower than the pupil.
Gotcha.
The hole in the center of your eye that allows light to come in.
Right.
And the retina, so the far left and right of the eye can still pick up stuff that's coming in at angles through the pupil. Now, another question that Leonardo had was why images aren't upside down in our brains, or how the image gets turned around, because the camera obscura was built then, and he knew that the image that it produced was upside down.
Right.
And so it had to be reversed if you wanted to see it the right way up. But he was trying to figure out what the mechanism in the head is that flips this image the right way up.
Yeah. Did he cut some head opens?
What did he discover, Ray? What is the device that reverses that image back up?
Well, he deduced through cutting heads up and eyes open and trying to follow the path. He determined that there was another part of, was it a part of the brain or part of something that's maybe behind the eye that inverts it? Because he didn't assume, like I would have assumed, that it was the brain itself that had that ability. He thought there was some extra step that was needed. You know, it comes in, it gets reversed, and then it goes to your brain. So I think he was wrong on that, but I don't have a lot of details.
Well, he couldn't find anything.
Right.
I don't know if he concluded it was in the brain, but obviously it's in the occipital lobe. It just takes that image and flips it up. Boom.
Right.
Reconstructs it. In fact, what we know is we don't actually get images on our retina that's sent to the brain. We get signal. We don't get an image. We get dots of light,
right.
Basically. Photons come in. They get registered by the retina. The retina converts them into electric signals that just is a bit of data on light and blurriness and focus and all that. Sends that down the vagus nerve, down the occipital nerve to the occipital lobe, and vagus nerves, I think, in the back of your head. It the brain just takes all of these data points and constructs an image.
Mm.
It tells you what it thinks is probably there. It
builds close enough.
It builds a three-dimensional hologram for you in your brain. You see with your brain. You don't see with your eyes. You see with your brain, which is why you can see things when you're asleep and your eyes are closed. Or you can close your eyes and imagine things. Your brain constructs the world around you based on data inputs.
That's cool.
So it doesn't need to flip anything. It just constructs the image as it believes it's there based on the data. Now, but the problem that Leonardo had at one point trying to work all this out is he was trying to figure out how the eye worked, but he had to cut open eyes.
Sure.
And the problem, like nobody has cut open more eyes than you, Ray.
Right.
As you well know, when you cut open an eye, it's like cutting open a ball sack. It just you've also done a lot of in your time. It just
don't want to brag, but
collapses. It's like cutting open a grape that's had the skin removed off it. It just like squeezing a
that's
grape.
No,
it just collapses.
It's no fun for anybody.
Gets it all over your clothes, all over your pants.
That's why you're an apron.
Going out on the
like
town
Dexter.
With eye all over your pants.
Right. What's that all over you? Eye. What?
Yeah.
Eye.
Did you? That's disgusting. Did you come in your pants? No, I just cut open an eye on my lap. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair enough then.
As long as you didn't come, we're all good. But see,
so
here,
what?
Yeah. Here's
what
the thing,
did he,
though.
What?
I've cut open more eyes, but the man who has single-handedly poked more people in the eye than anyone else, obviously, is Mo of the Three Stooges. I think I feel comfortable with that fact. But no, it's like, he had to think of something, because, yeah, he goes to dissect it. The whole thing falls apart. So it's like, one should place the whole eye in an egg white, boil it until it becomes solid, and then cut the egg and eye transversely in order that none of the middle portion of the eye be poured out. So not only am I butchering someone's eye, but now I got to ram it into an egg white, boil it, get it nice and hard, then cut it. This man is dedicated to science, or he's a psycho killer. I'm not sure which one. I'll let you pick. Or both.
Hey, kids, you know, you should try this at home.
Wait till your grandma's asleep. Get her eye out with a spoon. Go ahead.
Crack open an egg. Separate the white from the yolk.
Right.
Place the eye, grandma's eye, in the yolk.
Sure. Step two.
Slurp it all back into the eggshell.
Right.
Sticky tape around the eggshell. Right. Maybe a hot glue gun might be better. I'm not sure how that responds in the boiling
visible
water.
Tape.
And then boil it.
Boil it,
Two and a half minutes probably is my recommendation. Then, you don't want to overboil it,
right? You don't want to overboil
if you like,
an eye.
Depends how you like. If you like your eye runny, a little bit less. If you like it,
mine runny,
hard boiled,
a little bit longer, eye. Right?
Yeah. Good John Woo film from the late 80s, I think, early 90s.
Gotcha.
Hard boiled with Chow Yun Fat.
Mm.
I
like him.
What happened to Chow Yun Fat? I haven't seen him donkey's ages.
Kind of faded. Unless he's a big star in China, we'd never know.
Yeah, he's probably still making lots of films in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that he was at the opening of the Olympics in China. Oh. He was like in the opening ceremony, I think. Him and...
Good for him.
Michelle Yao or somebody was doing something. He probably
squeezed an eye out. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, good for him. I hope he's doing
it. Now,
yeah.
Leonardo's experiments on the optics system were 100 years, of course, to get ahead of the time. Because, no, he wrote it in his notebooks, but nobody read his notebooks.
Yeah, fuck that.
And so, you know, 100 years later, scientists started to think about this kind of stuff again. But Leonardo, way ahead of everybody.
Worked it out.
How many times have we said that over the course of the Leonardo series?
Normally, it's 200 and 300 years. This time he was only 100 and given some change years ahead of other people on this particular subject. So good for him.
Mm. Mm. Now, along with shadows and lines, another important part of painting, according to Leonardo, and also of Sfumato, was a knowledge of perspective. He said, painting is based on perspective, and perspective is nothing else than a thorough knowledge of the function of the eye. Now, we've talked about perspective before. Alakazam had written about perspective in his works on optics back in the 11th century. All of the Italian artists, Giotto, Ghiberti, Masaccio, Uccello, which means bird, by the way, and Donatello,
the turtle,
experimented, written about it, painted it, talked about it. Yeah, Brunelleschi, of course, old Bruno, the guy who built the dome for the Duomo, was sort of the guy who came back from Rome in his self-imposed exile after he lost the door competition. Came back and said, "You know what? It's really cool perspective," and he taught it particularly to Masaccio. Masaccio went, "Oh fuck yeah, I'm gonna perspective the shit out of the paintings I do before I die at age 23 or whatever it was." And Alberti, in his book on painting, wrote about perspective as he had learned it, I think, from Brunelleschi. But in Milan, Leonardo took it to the next level because he's Leonardo the motherfucking Da Vinci,
right?
The victor. Sounds like he wrote a book on the topic, again, may have even finished this one. The 16th century artist Benvenuto Cellini claimed that he owned a manuscript on perspective by Leonardo, which he described as the most beautiful a man ever made, or Leonardo, the most beautiful a man ever made, showing how objects... this is the book. Let me go back. He described the book as the most beautiful a man ever made, showing how objects foreshorten
Right.
Not only in depth, but also in breadth and height.
Right.
Now, sadly, it hasn't survived.
Mm-hmm.
But as I understand it, like guys back in the day, they understood the basic rule of perspective.
Yes.
Very which basic. Was things get appear smaller the further off in the distance mm-hmm. they are.
Right.
But Leonardo worked out, there's a lot more to it than that. You know, open your fucking eyes.
Literally.
Because the way they would paint things in the distance back then is they would paint them in focus, sharp outlines, details.
Right.
Demonstrating their mastery of fine, you know, painting.
Yeah. But that throws off Leonardo the viewer.
Well, Leonardo was like, but that's not how the eye works.
Good point.
When things recede into the distance, they become blurry. They smaller, you see less detail.
Blurry.
Well, they know smaller, but blurry. And also the color changes.
Right.
Because of the wavelength of the colors and interference with the colors getting from the object far away to your eye. There's lots of other wavelengths of light that are interfering with that by the time it hits your retina.
Right.
So the colors appear less vibrant
mm-hmm.
and the object looks blurry the further away it is. You see less detail. You shouldn't be painting detail in things that are far away. They should appear diminished color, diminished focus, and diminished size the further away.
Right.
They are. And no one had worked this out before. These guys, top of the game, professionals, and Leonardo's like a young Michael Jordan walking on a basketball court, jumping up in the air and just staying up there for 5 minutes while he takes his time to dunk a ball and then slowly floating back to the ground. And people were like, what the fuck just happened?
Where are the angels' wings? I don't see any wings.
Did you see that? Yeah. Did you see what I saw? He just jumped up in the air and just hovered there.
Yeah.
What has he got? Jetpack?
Probably. His
ropes? Is this Chinese kung fu film? Somebody's pulling him up with ropes and pulleys?
Right.
What?
Well, the one thing that got me was that Leonardo, I think, figured this out because he was willing to spend the time. And I think it's just the way his brain worked. He didn't get bored. I think he liked it. I think these other guys, if they had stumbled upon it, that would have been fine. But the idea of breaking it down, of not really knowing what you're looking for, but observing just so you can begin to ask more questions, not their forte, but that is Leonardo in a nutshell. Let me just sit here and watch this all day or do experiments all day long. Let's see what happens. And so he's able to glean more information.
And I think it gets back to, I think we've read this before, or maybe I just read it and we didn't get end up in the show, but in his writings on painting, he says that what you should do as a painter is break the thing that you're painting, the scene, into very tiny squares.
Right.
And you examine each square, each section, each, you know, micro section.
Right.
In extreme detail. You have to paint it.
It forces you.
You have to observe each thing and observe it in detail and paint it exactly as you see it.
Right.
And so if he's studying nature that way, if he's looking at a landscape or a scene, looking in the distance, he's just looking at each section and go, okay, exactly what do I see there? And how would I paint that? He's really breaking it down and thinking about it. It's like Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock Holmes thing. Like Leonardo's doing a freeze frame, and all of these like little mathematical quadrants and symbols are breaking down, and there's arrows and notes and, you know, degrees and stuff like that overlaid on his AI HUD, heads-up display that he has.
Right.
He's an Android.
Leonardo. Any data.
Data. Or like Schwarzenegger in the first Terminator film, you know, when he walks into the bar and the readouts, printouts,
Right.
How did that go again?
I don't know.
Now do the $6 million man's bionic arm sound.
Oh,
the running. Yeah, that's good.
No, that's the music. No. Jerking off.
And how did his bionic eye go?
It didn't. It just looked. I don't think there's a sound, is there?
No, it was like.
That's the sound of my one eye making that sound. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'd be sitting next to him on a bus. Hey, dude, could you keep your fucking eye quiet, please?
Could you turn your fucking eye down?
Right. Yeah. If you don't, I'll do it for you. And then I get my ass kicked. Again.
In your other bus. Eye.
And my exactly. Anyway.
Good eye. Leonardo wrote, there are three branches of perspective. The first deals with the apparent diminution.
Diminution.
Oh, good. Diminution.
I don't use that word.
Me either. Of objects as they recede from the eye. The second addresses the way colours vary as they recede from the eye.
Right.
The third is concerned with how the objects in a picture ought to be less detailed as they become more remote.
Now,
so the standard rule of proportion, as you and I both learnt when we did our Masters in Fine Arts in Florence.
I remember that.
An object that is twice as far from the eye as another object will appear half the size of the first, though they be of the same size really, and as the space doubles, the diminution will double.
Gotcha.
You and I had to memorize that when we did our Masters
in Fine Arts. Italian. It was so hard, so annoying.
It was...
Yeah, they made us write it backwards.
In an Italian.
Upside down.
At the time. Upside down in an Italian.
Right. I actually had to be in Sergio. An Italian when I said that. Oh, hold on, I lost my... Okay, raise back.
Now, Leonardo realized that this rule would apply to a painting of normal size, one where the edges are not significantly... further away from the viewer than the center is, but what about a really big fucking painting, like a fresco or a mural on an entire wall? Like, let's say you were going to paint The Last Supper on a massive wall with cheap paints you bought at the $2 shop that will just peel off in 6 weeks, but still, was just paid to paint it.
Yeah.
No one told me. No one said in the contract that it had to last more than 12 months.
Right.
I'm done.
And a budget.
My name is Paul.
Would have been nice.
This is between y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I blew all the budget on hookers and blow, but it's not the point.
He realized that if you have a really big painting.
Right.
Where an edge might be twice as far away from the viewer as the center of the painting is.
Yeah.
You have to use a different kind of perspective, which he called complex perspective. He said complex perspective occurs when no surface can be seen exactly as it is because the eye that sees it is not equally remote from all its edges.
So he takes... go ahead. No, just he takes the general idea of perspective that someone else came up with. That's fine. He takes it to a whole new level, and now the fucker's making up artificial... or whatever the proper word is, perspective. I mean, that's pretty fucking smart.
Yeah, he said, in artificial perspective, when objects of unequal size are placed at various distances, the smallest is nearer to the eye than the largest.
Wow.
You must diminish the sharpness of those objects in proportion to their increasing distance from the eye of the spectator. The parts that are near in the foreground should be finished in a bold, determined manner, but those in the distance must be unfinished and confused in their outlines. Because things appear smaller at a distance, the tiny details of an object vanish, and then even larger details begin to vanish.
Right.
At a great distance, even the outlines of the forms are...
yeah.
Blurry and indistinct.
And their colors. And I hear you, dear listeners, going, duh, motherfuckers. But no duh, not duh, not duh until Leonardo comes along and figures this shit out. And then maybe someone else figures out 100 or 200 years later. But no, this stuff, this is cutting edge. And that's why the paintings in the Renaissance take a leap from previous, the dark age, that's dark times like in Star Wars. But because you and I have seen plenty of those flat, two-dimensional ugly paintings with the bold lines around the face. No, this is Leonardo. This is him taking this art, this science, this combination of everything he's learned. He's taken it to a whole new level. And he should be praised as a painter and as a polymath for all this.
Now, to observe this, I think everyone should open up two paintings, which I'm sure you all have next to you. I should pull my book out.
Right.
A book behind me. Pull out Ginevra. What was her name? Benci? Ginevra di Benci.
Yes.
One of the earlier, I think his first portrait of a woman. And then pull up the Mona Lisa. And just, which, you know, we'll get to, I think, in a future episode. Well, I'm sure we might. If we survive that
long. Let's not get carried away.
Yeah, let's not overcommit here. We'll do an entire Leonardo series and never do the Mona Lisa.
Or The Last Supper.
That would be funny. Yeah, we're over it. We're not doing that. Yeah.
I'm over it.
Now, look at the way he's painted the two. Now, these are like, I don't know what they are apart, 10, 15 years apart, I think. 15 years, probably. But if you look at first of all, look at their faces and, you know, the blurriness of, look at the outline of Ginevra's jawline, for example, and neckline and that kind of stuff. And then look at Mona Lisa's. Mona Lisa's is much softer. The Ginevra looks almost amateurish by comparison, I think. It looks, it's very sharp a detail. Mona Lisa's face, much more blurry. Look at Mona Lisa's smile, zoom in on Ginevra's smile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can see Mona Lisa's outline of her lips and the smile lines. Yeah, Ginevra's not, you know, not a shitty painting by any measurement, but look at the outline of the noses, compare the two. Mona Lisa's is much sort of softer, blurrier, gentler on the eye. Same with her eyelids and those sorts of things.
And because of that, it's more realistic. She looks Mona Lisa.
And it's more famous.
Yes, that too.
And not, and yeah, partly because it was stolen, obviously. But also, it's considered, you know, the great masterpiece of Western painting. Also, look at the backgrounds of the two. Now, if you zoom into the background in Ginevra, you see he does, the colours change in the distance, and you can't see detail on those trees or mountainsides. Yeah. Well, sort of dimmed. You know, it's like a mauvey, purpley, hazy sort of background.
But you get the idea.
Then you compare it to the Mona Lisa with the rocky background, far superior in terms of the depiction of the blurriness and the smokiness and the haziness of the background.
Away. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, just like, I think if you compare the two, you really get a sense for how he's progressed in that 10, 15 years in his thinking around blurriness, smokiness, and sfumato. That's how you're going to get your best demonstration, I think, of his use of sfumato. And he says in his writings, how many in the representation of towns and other objects remote from the eye express every part of the buildings in the same manner as if they were near? It is not so in nature, because it is not possible to perceive at any great distance the precise form of objects. The painter, therefore, who delineates the outlines and the tiny details of parts, as several have done, will not accurately depict distant objects, but by this error will make them appear exceedingly near. When objects are distant, there is a great deal of air interposed, which weakens the appearance of forms and prevents our seeing distinctly the minute parts of such objects. It behooves the painter, therefore, to touch those parts slightly in an unfinished manner.
Right.
Bring up not Brunelleschi, Botticelli. Botticelli. Bring up the Virgin, I guess. No, yeah. Virgin Isles, Virgin Mary's Clitoris, Annunciation of the Virgin.
That's a different website.
Botticelli. I know I've got a big high version on my hard drive, but I just can't. Oh, the Venus. Botticelli.
The Birth of Venus.
Botticelli. Shelley, that's the one I'm talking about. Verth. There we go. Okay. Now, look at The Birth of Venus by Botticelli. Fabulous. Love it. Wonderful. Painted, you know, what is it, about 1480?
Yeah. Come on.
You're just saying that? Do you know?
No, I'm just totally saying that. I can't
remember. 14, somewhere in the 1480s. I'm just looking it up. I can't remember exactly.
Trying to get my thing bigger.
Yeah, I know. Mid 1480s. So, you know, yeah. 15 years before Leonardo's writing about perspective. But it's a masterpiece, still considered a masterpiece. But look at it, look at the background, look at the distance.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the color of the hills in the distance there, really no different from the color of the landscape to Venus.
Yeah.
The trees, you see little trees in outline there, but they're not painted blurry. You can sort of see sharp outlines. You know, the water color doesn't change much as it recedes into the distance. Just a little bit on the horizon, but not much. So right. And you look at the outlines of all the characters.
Yeah, very exactly.
sharp outlines.
Yes.
On Venus. You can see her hand. You can see around her marvelous, marvelous breasts, her marvelous face. Everything very sharp outlines on all of the objects. He's painting inside the lines here,
definitely. Botticelli. He's doing it well, like, but it's still inside.
Doing a great job. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's a masterpiece. But, you know, Leonardo's like, yeah, but that's a fucking bunch of bullshit. That's not how things look in real life, right?
It looks like a painting. It looks like a nice, nice painting, but it looks like a painting, whereas Leonardo's is starting to really look like real life as he goes on.
When he said that, Botticelli got up and slapped him during one of the speeches.
They took away his award, or I don't know.
No, they didn't. They said, that's fine. No repercussions whatsoever. Sit back down, take your seat.
Everybody hates Chris Rock.
Physical violence, that's fine. Just go do it.
It's great for ratings. That's why we do it on the show. Everybody
hates Chris. Yeah.
Everybody hates Chris. There we go.
That was the latest episode of Everybody Hates Chris. Best joke I heard was the police swung into action following their normal procedures. They were looking for a set of fresh prints.
Well done. Well done. I like that. That
wasn't my joke, but I liked it. I wish I could take it. Yeah. All right, that is the end of Sfumato. Next time, if we survive that long, Will Smith doesn't get us first, The Last Supper. We shall be talking about...
I've heard of that. Cheryl?
L'ultima cena.
All right.
I think the last dinner, the last l'ultima cena. I don't know if that's the actual Italian for the Last Supper, but l'ultima cena.
Yeah.
Grazie mille, re.
Arrivederci.
Mi piace il. Can't remember episode. Anyway, il podcast.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, the podcast was pleasing to me. Mi piace il podcast.
Okay. I'm glad you liked it. Tune in next week.